A Story Publishing presents Echoes of Doubt. The trick with mornings was to convince yourself they mattered. Daniel Mercer set a kettle on the stove, the old kind that shrieked instead of humming, and opened the window for air still free of exhaust and lawnmower fumes. The smell of wet earth and fertilizer seeped in from next door. Somewhere a chainsaw started up, a neighbor too eager to take down a limb before breakfast. He poured instant coffee, black, into a battered Seattle Mariners mug chipped in three places. He'd abandoned fancy pour-overs years ago, around the time he realized small comforts outlast grand gestures. 7:45. He had minutes left before the pharmacy called. He stepped onto the back stoop and watched a beetle nudge through last year's leaves. His thumb traced a crack in the mug, remembering a day sharper than this one, when the seams in a morning felt ready to tear apart. That memory always began with the jangle of the bell over the pharmacy door. He'd been counting change for a bottle of cough syrup when a young, panicked voice said something he couldn't fully recall. The outline in the man's jacket, the trembling shape of a gun, was all he really saw. The pharmacist ducked. Daniel's heart hammered like a nail gun. He remembered wide eyes, slow movements, the drawer of the register clattering open. He'd never told Linda at work or Kevin at the hardware store how it still haunted him. Sometimes an unspoken truth was simpler. The day would be ordinary, he insisted. Second chances were a myth for folks who didn't need them. For everyone else, life plodded forward, a string of small tasks and never quite mended apologies. Daniel drove past St. Elizabeth's steeple and Johnny's auto, past the listing house boarded up where someone's memory should have been. He waved at the crossing guard, who smiled back with three real teeth and a few gold ones. Inside the pharmacy, fluorescent lights blinked grudgingly before staying on. Sandy, the new cashier, stacked boxes of bandages with steady efficiency. She glanced over and gave a brief nod. "Morning," Daniel said, shrugging off his windbreaker. "Delivery guys show up yet?" She shook her head. "They're always late." "Guess that's life." He tried a smile. "We keep ordering anything heavier." "Than a feather, it won't change. Mind watching the register?" "Mrs. Arteaga likes to talk bunions if she finds a friendly ear." Sandy brushed a stray lock of hair aside. "On it." Her matter-of-fact tone put him a little more at ease. By mid-morning, he was on autopilot, counting pills, handling insurance forms, drifting into thoughts of the kid who'd waved a gun but never fired. The police had asked their questions, then left his small truth alone. Sometimes he wished he knew whether that frightened stranger got caught or simply vanished. He tried to push it aside, though the memory hovered at the edge of his mind. There were day-to-day worries to manage, vitamins to shelve, endless refills to log. Lunch was a turkey sandwich at his desk, the pickles gone rubbery from a week in the fridge. Outside, a train rumbled by right on schedule, its noon horn rolling through the air like a distant reminder that time always moves forward. At 5, Daniel locked up. The sun hung low, stretching shadows across the cracked asphalt. In his mailbox, along with bills and an oil change coupon, was a thick white envelope from the county courthouse. He opened it with his car key and read the summons. Break time, 0.4. Jury service required, 8 a.m. Monday. Homicide. Division 2. He read it again. Blood thudded in his ears. The everyday faded as he realized he'd be asked to judge a murder case. No details, just the formality of the words. He climbed the stairs to his apartment, poured a splash of whiskey, and set the envelope on the table as if it might go off in his hand. What did a jury do, really? 12 people sliced through a stranger's life, then went home to their own. Could he be impartial? Could the robbed sit in judgment of a robber? Or was that another myth like second chances? Out in the hallway, Mr. Corbett from 2D shuffled by, cologne of cheap cigars trailing him. "Evening, Dan," he called. "Evening," Daniel returned. He closed the door and stared again at the summons, the threat of a fine if he ignored it, the cool assumption he'd do his civic duty without hesitation. He wrote the date on his calendar, the black ink bleeding a little on the thin page. Monday, 8 a.m., jury. He finished the whiskey slowly, warmth snaking through his chest. Whatever waited beyond that. Summons, he'd face it, ready or not. The courthouse didn't bother with illusions. Yellowed tile, worn benches, the wet wool smell of rain-soaked coats and old nerves. Daniel Mercer followed the dip in the linoleum to the security checkpoint, where a guard waved a wand over his chest and grunted, "All clear." His shoes squeaked with each step as he moved through the lobby, gripping the flimsy slip stamped with his juror number. EO 117. On the second floor, Division 2's courtroom greeted him with the hush of stalled expectations. Men and women in best sweaters or borrowed suits hovered in the hallway, coffee cups in hand, eyes darting as if trying to find exits. No one looked eager to serve. Inside, the air clung to a dull gray stillness. Walls the color of old oatmeal, scuffed baseboards showing the wear of 100 trials. Daniel spotted his name on a folded card, third seat from the end. He sat, knees stiff, studying the room as though it might quiz him on every detail. Across the aisle, the defendant behind a battered oak table, late 20s, pale, hair combed so flat it shone. The ill-fitting suit hung on him like borrowed skin. He never looked up, not even when the court clerk called names or the bailiff handed out instructions. Daniel couldn't stop watching the man's hands knotted so tight his knuckles went white, as if he feared letting go of something. Other jurors trickled into place, strangers forming a neat row of uncertain expressions. Daniel's palms felt damp, the paper in his hand turning soft. A woman took the seat beside him, iron gray hair in a tight knot. Her mouth was a firm, uninviting line, but she gave him a nod. "Linda Reeves," she said, her voice edged with a rough warmth. "You, Daniel?" He nodded. "Mercer." She scraped a glance ahead, then allowed a thin smile. "Looks like we'll be here a while. Better than tax season, I guess." He managed a slight grin. She seemed like the type who kept her opinions guarded. Nearby, two other jurors chatted about parking options. Someone behind them coughed into a tissue, already looking drained. The judge entered in a sweep of robes, hair gone snowy at the temples. She eyed them like she'd learned to expect little but hoped for enough. "Be seated," she said. "This is State v. Mark. Hastings. You are to judge by evidence, not assumption. That's a mandate." She hardly raised her voice, yet the room obeyed. A man in a crisp navy suit stood, the prosecutor. "Thank you, Your Honor. Ladies and gentlemen, in this trial, you'll learn that Mark Hastings shot Kenneth Doyle in the stairwell of the Harmony Arms complex. We have fingerprints on the firearm, multiple eyewitnesses, and a motive tied to unpaid debts. The state will show you undeniable proof, evidence that points directly to the accused." He paused, letting the words settle. Then he offered a clipped nod and sat. The defense attorney rose next, short and thin with a tie that fought the color of his suit. "Stories can hide as much as they show," he began, voice raspy from too many late nights. "We intend to demonstrate Mark Hastings wasn't even there. A neighbor saw someone else in a black jacket fleeing the scene, someone taller than my client, carrying a weapon. The police dismissed that testimony to chase an easier narrative. This is a case of misidentification, and we'll prove it." When he sat, Linda leaned in near Daniel's shoulder. "He's better than that suit," she murmured. Daniel nodded. The defense's words tugged at something in him. How quickly people see what they expect instead of what is. He recalled the pharmacy holdup, the cop who'd glanced at him like he was hiding something just by standing there. The memory crawled under his skin. The judge declared a short recess. The jurors stood, stretching. A man with a green notebook muttered, "Fingerprints and witnesses? Guy's practically wearing a target. Nobody spoke up to challenge him. Linda's gaze flicked to Daniel. They're coming on strong, she said quietly.
Yeah,
Daniel answered, forcing a half smile. Guess we'll see if it all holds up. He looked at the notes he'd scrawled, but his mind drifted to the defendant's hands, clenched so hard the skin seemed about to split. The trial was only beginning, yet Daniel's gut knotted with the sense that this was more than a question of guilt or innocence. Old memories whispered, reminders that what looks certain can still be wrong. The bailiff signaled them back. Daniel filed in, heart drumming behind his ribs. Day one, and the stakes already felt heavier than the gray. Sky outside. Whatever came next, he suspected it would test more than just the facts. It might test his conscience, too. There was a rhythm to courtroom testimony. The dry recitation of facts, the rare catch in someone's voice the instant they stepped onto shaky ground. Daniel felt it the moment Mrs. Haddock from 4B took the stand, smoothing her sweater and glancing everywhere but the defendant's table. She recalled hearing two voices in the stairwell, one raised in anger, followed by what she described as a bang, sort of like a car backfire. Then, rapid footsteps. She volunteered that everyone in the building knew Hastings had an ongoing feud with Doyle, only to flinch when the defense objected and the judge told her to stick to observations, not rumors. Still, her certainty seemed to cling to the walls, painting the room with an unspoken verdict. The prosecutor's next witness was a teenage boy, fidgety with an Adam's apple that bobbed whenever he tried to answer. He said he'd been late fetching laundry from the basement, bad timing, he called it, and saw a man in a dark jacket sprint up the stairs. Was it Mr. Hastings? The prosecutor asked softly. The boy's gaze flicked to Mark Hastings, then away. Looked like him. He moved fast, stashed his hands in his pockets. He wore that red cap, same one the defendant has. For a beat, the courtroom stilled. The defense asked if he'd ever actually spoken with Hastings. The boy shook his head, shoulders tense as if he expected scolding. His answer felt forced yet final. By noon, the tension was high enough to taste. During the lunch break, Daniel slipped into the hallway for air. The memory of the pharmacy robbery intruded, that trembling figure with a gun, a moment forever carved into him. The police had cared about descriptions and placements, but ignored the raw fear in the robber's eyes. He wondered if the same quick labels were gathering around Mark Hastings now. When court resumed, the prosecution presented physical evidence. An officer displayed photos of a pistol with fingerprints matched to Hastings. Neat, damning whorls on cold steel. The gun itself lay sealed in a bag before the jury. Mark Hastings had filed for a firearms permit 5 years earlier, and those prints tied him to the weapon like a signature. Linda Reeves, seated beside Daniel, scribbled in neat lines on her notepad. She leaned close, muttering, "They've stacked a lot here. Feels like they're building a wall." "All I see is a lot of surety," Daniel replied, not sure himself what he wanted to convey. Her eyes narrowed. "Meaning?" He shrugged, the pharmacy flash fresh in his mind. "Sometimes people only see what fits." Before anyone could press further, the prosecution called its final witness of the day, a tired-looking woman who worked late shifts at a nearby convenience store. She'd noticed a man in a dark jacket and red cap passing by the ice chest hours before the shooting, head low, like he'd just lost some argument. When shown a photo lineup, she pointed to Hastings. As the judge declared a recess, the group of jurors clustered in a small, stark deliberation room. The overhead lights twitched on and off, spattering everyone's features with harsh shadows. Coffee brewed in the corner, thick and stale. A man with a green notebook spoke first. "Prints on the gun. Eyewitness put him there." Next, he tapped his pen impatiently. "Looks open and shut." A woman by the window fingered the collar of her cardigan. He's out of work, had a grudge with the victim. We all see where this is going. Daniel opened his mouth but found no words. A memory shifted inside him. The pharmacy, the police questions, his own shaking hands. Facts felt so certain until you saw the small holes big enough to swallow the truth. Linda set down her pen. I'm not saying he's innocent, but maybe we don't rush it. She shifted her gaze to Daniel. You've been quiet. Go on. He hesitated, thumb brushing a splinter in the worn wood table. Sometimes the facts line up too neatly, that's all. Could be right, could be unstoppable, but maybe we ought to see how the defense counters. Green Notebook snorted. Don't let a sob story derail you. You think everyone's lying? Daniel stared at a faded courthouse painting on the wall. Not lying. But witnesses get things wrong, and sometimes they don't even know they're doing it. Linda watched him, something reserved in her expression. I hear you, she said quietly. Doesn't mean the evidence is fake. No, he admitted, but evidence isn't always truth. Bailiff knocked, signaling 5 minutes to return. A heavyset juror stretched with a groan. Don't see how we're missing anything. Defense better have a miracle. This guy's exactly who you'd expect. Daniel said nothing, pressing his thumb into his palm, remembering that trembling robber's eyes. Frightened, cornered, not evil. He wondered if Mark Hastings felt that same press of judgment in his chest. The bailiff's voice carried through the doorway. Time, folks. They filed out, stepping in line. Most looked confident, as if the puzzle was already solved. Daniel lagged behind, unsettled by the thought that he might be the only one who saw how easily facts could fail. He followed them into the corridor, that familiar weight of memory sitting cold in his stomach, certain he wouldn't be able to keep quiet forever. When the defense lawyer finally stood, his movements were deliberate, hands braced against the table as though each joint ached. The prosecution's case had weighed on the room all morning. Guilt, motive, and the certainty of must have been him. At the battered defense table, Mark Hastings stood hunched, shoulders drawn tight, as if he wished he could sink through the floor. Clearing his throat, the lawyer began, "Let's talk about these fingerprints. You've seen the pistol. You've been told it proves everything." But Mark Hastings owned that gun legally. It stayed locked in his closet, exactly where the officers found it, with none of the victim's prints on it. If he really shot Mr. Doyle in a public stairwell, how likely is it he'd calmly wipe it clean, then stash it back home unfired? A few jurors glanced at one another. Uncertainty flickered. He paced in front of the jury box, shoulders tense. Then there's the cap. It's red, it's distinctive, true. But both witnesses called the suspect tall. Mark stands 5'9 on a good day. Mrs. Haddock said the man practically loomed over her. Does he look like he looms? Objection, the prosecutor cut in. Argument, not evidence. The judge gave a listless wave. Jury will recall the testimony in its entirety. Proceed. The defense called back the teenage witness. The boy perched nervously on the stand. You said you saw a red cap. Did you see the man's face? The boy avoided Mark Hastings's gaze. No, he was moving too fast. About how tall was this person? He seemed tall, maybe around 6 foot. You're 6'2", correct? He hesitated, nodding stiffly. So he could have been near your height, or maybe less, the lawyer suggested. Quick movements can be confusing. Anything else you really noticed? The boy stared at his hands. The cap stood out, that's all. The defense pressed the convenience store clerk next, showing her photos of the crime scene. She shrank under his questions. You noticed the man walking by, hood up or down? She frowned. I guess it was down, but he wore a red cap. Were you sure it was Mark Hastings? Or did you see a figure that matched a rough description? She swallowed. I thought it was him. His jacket looked the same. He nodded and showed a cell phone record that placed Hastings a mile away soon after the shooting. The prosecution dismissed the data as incomplete, but a thread of doubt wound through the courtroom. Leaning on the lectern, the lawyer finished by pointing to a grainy security still. "This is the only camera image. Do any of you actually see a face?" The blurry shape was all shadow and parka, no features. "We ask you to remember, rushed assumptions make it easy to see what you expect." When court recessed, the judge sent the jurors to deliberate. They filed into a cramped room with scuffed walls and a single overhead bulb that flickered like a tired pulse. As the door clicked shut, Green Notebook dropped into his seat with a sigh. "Anybody think we didn't just watch two lawyers try to fog up what's plain as day?" He tapped his pen against his notebook. Janice, stern in her cardigan, exhaled. "Sure, the height detail could be off, but three people tied Hastings to the scene. Hard to ignore." Linda Reeves twisted off the lid of her water bottle and paused before drinking. "Defense didn't change the basics. The gun is his, and we know Hastings hated the victim. That's enough for motive." Daniel Mercer watched them, shoulders rigid. "Or it's enough to make everyone see a neat story and ignore the holes." Green Notebook gave a half laugh. "Right. Another conspiracy, Daniel?" Daniel inhaled slowly. "I'm only saying we rely on partial memories. The boy saw a shape, not a face. Haddock saw someone big. The store clerk spotted a jacket and a cap. It's a puzzle, but the pieces don't fit as neatly as the prosecution claims." Janice folded her arms. "So you think the police just grabbed the wrong man for convenience?" "I think it happens more often than we'd like to admit," Daniel said quietly. Linda set her water down. "Daniel, do you honestly think he's innocent?" He met her gaze and spoke evenly. "I'm not sure, but I need more than what we've got to call it, beyond a reasonable doubt. I'm not comfortable locking a man away on a guess." The heavy-set juror drummed thick fingers on the table. "We'll be at this forever if we second-guess every witness. The gun had his prints." Linda ran a finger over her notes. "He did say he kept it in the closet. That's on record." Daniel pushed on, voice calm. "Would a killer return the weapon to its usual spot instead of ditching it? No one saw Hastings' face in that stairwell, just a coat, a cap. It's all impressions backed by a known feud that can slant people's minds." Janice smirked. "You heard of Occam's razor? Simple explanations are usually right." Daniel nodded. "Sometimes they are. Sometimes they're just the easy answer." A pause weighed on the group until Linda eased in. "He's got a point that we're leaning heavily on witness recollection. It might be worth another pass through the statements to be sure." Green Notebook slapped the table. "Let's vote." He raised his hand high. "Who thinks he's guilty?" In a flurry, eight hands rose. Linda hesitated, glancing at Daniel, then lifted hers more slowly. All eyes fell to Daniel. He stayed still. "Not guilty. Not with what we have." Someone groaned. Another juror muttered, "We're going to be here all night." Linda reached for her ring, twisting it with restless fingers. "We can walk through the testimonies again. If the case is so airtight, double-checking won't break it." Green Notebook let out a tight breath. "Fine, but let's not drag this out. He did it. You'll see." Linda nodded, though her voice shook a little. "If we're sure, we can defend it. Going over the details shouldn't be a problem." Frustration crept in, turning the air thick. The walls felt closer with each word spat in disagreement. Daniel could almost hear his speak. His own pulse. He forced himself to keep steady. "That's all I'm asking," he said. "A careful look. If we decide he's guilty, at least we'll know we didn't jump." Linda glanced at him sideways, her confidence in the prosecution's version wavering. The group set their notes on the table. 8 guilty, 1 uncertain, 1 ready to fight. Nobody flinched from the tension. Voices rose, colliding in half-arguments and quick retorts. Linda's face pinched in concentration. Beneath it all, Daniel felt the weight of his own doubts and the memory of how easily people could get misread, labeled, or judged. He kept his stare level, refusing to bow to the pressure in the room. The difference between guilty and not guilty could hinge on a single overlooked detail, or one juror's willingness to insist on it. Green Notebook pressed his pen against his notepad so firmly it rattled the table. "We could chew on this forever, Mercer, but if you stall loud enough, you'll scare off the truth." Janice sat straighter, eyes sharp behind square glasses. "So we hold up everyone's life because you're chasing doubts, Daniel?" "The law says, beyond a reasonable doubt, not beyond any doubt you feel like inventing." Daniel drew a slow breath, thumb pinched between his knuckles. He scanned their impatient faces, Linda's among them, tense yet uneasy. She'd voted guilty before, but he sensed a crack in her certainty now. "I'm not inventing anything," he said quietly. "We all heard the same evidence, but if we're honest, we've only got a vague figure in a red cap. Mrs. Haddock couldn't ID him. The boy just caught a blur. The clerk wasn't sure either. Yet we've pinned everything on Mark Hastings because he fits our neat assumptions." Frank, heavy set with a tight haircut, shrugged. "His prints are on that gun. He and Doyle had a public feud. It all lines up." Daniel's chin lifted. "He owned it, legally. It stayed in his closet. Are we saying he calmly wiped it down and put it back after shooting someone? Does that really add up, or is it just convenient?" Green Notebook tapped his pen again. "We're not writing a detective novel. People do stupid things under pressure." Linda shuffled her notes. "True, but the defense pointed out details we're ignoring. We're certain Hastings is guilty, because the feud's easy to see." Frank leaned forward, glaring. "Linda, you voted guilty. Now you're swapping sides for Daniel?" She paused, turning her ring on her finger. "I want to be sure. The prosecution told a good story, but it might not cover everything." Green Notebook exhaled loudly. "What? You think the cops don't know how to do their jobs?" Daniel answered. "They're human. 8 years ago, I saw a robbery in a pharmacy. The cops arrested a man from my neighborhood, wrong jacket, wrong voice, but they were sure. I hesitated, never said a thing, and later they caught the real robber halfway to Tacoma. One slip in ID, that's all it took." Janice crossed her arms. "That's regrettable, Daniel. This is different." He held her eye. "It's only different if we're right." Frank drummed his thick fingers on the table. "So we let a suspect off because you messed up once?" Linda's voice dropped to a steadier pitch. "Mrs. Haddock said the killer was tall, nearly looming over her. Hastings is 5'9". The boy saw a figure with a cap, but not the man's face. If those are holes, maybe we need to see if there are others." Frank shot her a dark look. "We can't poke at every mistake. This guy had motive, a weapon. Nobody else did." Daniel spread his hands. "Motive isn't proof, and those prints only show he owned the gun, not that he fired it that night." Green Notebook shoved aside his notes. "Keep talking like that, and no one's ever guilty. Some of us have work to get back to, Mercer." Linda rubbed her forehead. "We're deciding a man's future. If there's any real doubt he did this, we can't ignore it. Otherwise, the real murderer's still out there, while we lock up someone for convenience." Cold rain pelted the window in bursts. The overhead light flickered, humming with each sway of voltage. In the silence, Daniel flexed his fingers to keep calm. "I've lived with the weight of a bad call before. I don't want this to be another one." Janice's pen clicked against her notebook. "We can't make this about your guilt, Daniel." "Or it's exactly about that," Linda said, voice quiet yet firm. Being sure matters. Frank sipped stale coffee. All this doubt talk leads nowhere. We can't prove a negative. Daniel nodded slowly. We can try, or we can convict on. Speak. Guesswork. We need to figure out which. Seconds passed. Linda broke the hush. I'm with Daniel. Let's vote again. If we're still split, we review the testimony point by point. Green Notebook fumed. Fine. We'll see what good it does. He tore a sheet from his pad. Everyone, write it down. They scribbled in sullen silence. Daniel's hand trembled as he wrote, not guilty, and folded the paper. Linda's slip landed beside his. Janice and Frank each dropped theirs, faces stiff with irritation. One by one, the rest followed. A knock came from the other side of the door, two solid raps from the bailiff. Ready in there? Green Notebook shot Daniel a narrow look. Almost, he called, not bothering to mask his annoyance. Daniel breathed in, feeling the pressure of it all, the memory of that wrong arrest, the tension of this locked room, the knowledge that no verdict came without risk. He caught Linda's gaze. This time, it was steady. If they were wrong, let it be because they questioned too much, not too little. The scraps of paper waited in the center, rustling like restless confessions, and he realized that doubt could be as defining as any certainty. The scraps of paper waited in a lopsided stack as if they knew they'd been written under duress. Someone's handwriting stumbled across the back of an envelope. Another had torn a flyer for a lost cat in half. The atmosphere in the jury room might have been smoke for how thick it felt. Linda Reeves reached over, her wedding ring glinting under the jaundiced ceiling light. One by one, she slid the ballots to herself. No sense drawing it out, she said. Her voice wasn't quite the same as when she'd first filed in, softer now, stripped of the early certainty that had carried most of them along. Let's tally. Green Notebook watched her unblinking. Frank scowled like he might put his shoulder to the wall and burst through. Janice arranged her papers as if she were storing up ammunition. Daniel Mercer, meanwhile, felt his pulse slow for the first time in hours, not calm exactly, but braced for whatever came next. Linda read the verdicts aloud, one at a time. Guilty, 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 not guilty, guilty, not guilty, guilty. Her voice caught barely on the sixth, she went on. Not guilty, not guilty. Speak, guilty, not guilty. She paused, counting in her head. Six for guilty. Six for not guilty. A tie. No way out but forward. Frank barked, perfect. We're back where we started, and smacked the table with his broad palm. Christ. Janice's jaw twitched. How about we stop listening to ghost stories and make a real decision, she said, eyeing Daniel and Linda. This can't go on. Daniel leaned forward, elbows on the battered wood. We're not machines, Janice. If it could go on forever, maybe we'd get it right. She shook her head tersely. We're not here to be philosophers, Daniel. No, he allowed, but we're here to judge, and that should be the hardest thing in the world, not the easiest. Linda studied the strain on everyone's faces. We're split for a reason, she said. It's not a joke. I walked in here thinking I knew how it would all line up, but every fact got a little smudged around the edges. If you're as sure as you claim, why do you look so worried? Frank exhaled. Because I don't want my name on letting a killer walk. What if we're wrong? Daniel locked eyes with him. And what if we lock up the wrong man? Have any of you woken up in the middle of the night wondering if you destroyed someone's life for nothing? I have. Frank reddened, lips pressing thin. All I know is we've got prints, motive, and witnesses. Everybody wants a perfect answer, but real life doesn't serve perfect. If there's always a maybe, then nobody's ever guilty. Linda swallowed, her gaze flicking between them. Sometimes a maybe's all we have to keep ourselves honest. Daniel nodded. We're not ignoring evidence. We're challenging how it's interpreted. That's the job, right? Janice tapped her pen, producing an unsteady rhythm. You heard the same testimony we did, Daniel? Are you saying half the room is blind? I'm saying witnesses make mistakes, he replied. Same way I once made one that almost wrecked a man's life. Frank gestured at the dingy walls as if they summed up everything. Fine, then. Let's keep squabbling until the bailiff locks us in. Linda took a slow breath. We're not close to agreement, so we might as well show it. No more slips of paper. Say it out loud. Green Notebook's brows drew down. Sure. The others exchanged looks. Tense. Speak, but ready. They went around the table. It wavered at first, each voice heavy under the flickering overhead light. Green Notebook, guilty. Frank, guilty. Janice, guilty. The woman in the cardigan hesitated, rubbing at her collar, then murmured, not guilty. The tall man near the water cooler, arms folded, offered a curt, not guilty. Everyone else followed in turn, the calls broken and raw. When it reached Daniel, he spoke firmly, not guilty. Linda was last. She took so long that Green Notebook began tapping his pen. But when she finally answered, her voice was resolute, not guilty. 6-6, a deadlock all the same. She set her pen down, spine rigid. We have to tell them. Green Notebook stuffed his papers in a bag. Janice gathered her things with staccato movements, glaring at Daniel as though he'd tracked mud across her tidy beliefs. Frank scraped back his chair. His glare might have cracked the plaster if he'd aimed it at the walls. The bailiff stepped inside, mouth twisted in mild impatience. Any developments? Linda cleared her throat. We're hung. We can't reach a verdict. He nodded, unimpressed but not surprised. With a curt gesture, he led them out. Daniel's heart pounded as they filed into the hallway of dull floor tiles and stale air, a corridor designed to drain a sense of direction from anyone who passed. They retraced their steps under buzzing fluorescent lights, back into the courtroom that thrummed with tension. The judge fixed them with a measured gaze. Madam Foreperson, your verdict? Linda wet her lips. We are unable to reach a verdict, Your Honor. The jury is deadlocked. A hush swept the room. Mark Hastings, the defendant, stared at the battered table with the air of a man who'd given up measuring time. The judge steepled her fingers. Very well. The court accepts your statement of deadlock. She glanced to the prosecutor, then the defense, speaking with firm, practiced clarity. Case is declared a mistrial, and the jury is dismissed. Chatter rose like an exhale no one could stop. The prosecutor bowed her head for a moment, frustration pinching her expression. The defense attorney pressed his palms to his eyes, too drained for triumph. Mark Hastings turned, startled, as if he'd only just realized a sliver of possibility remained. His hands slowly uncurled. The jurors stood as a group, uncertainty trailing them like a half-formed shadow. Janice walked out stiff-spined, refusing to meet anyone's gaze. Frank lumbered away, muttering to himself, shoulders braced like he meant to bulldoze the next obstacle. Green Notebook left in a silent hurry, not even glancing at Daniel. Daniel stepped out of the jury box, heart still thudding. Linda hovered near the door, hugging her folder to her chest. Beyond the threshold, worn marble steps led them to the corridor. No press cameras waited, no grand spectacle, just the tight hush of official business concluding. Maintenance workers shuffled by, pushing carts of supplies while ignoring the swirl of strangers with complicated expressions. At last, Linda turned to Daniel. I feel like I was just in a storm, like there should be lightning or something. Daniel tried for a smile. A storm in a bottle, maybe. She gave a fractional nod, fiddling with her wedding ring. You mentioned you'd made a bad call before, given the police a name that stuck. That was real? He looked away for a moment, not wanting to see the condemnation in her eyes. Yeah, I worked at a pharmacy. saw a robbery go down once. The cops came after, asked me if a man walking by at the time looked suspect. I got the details muddled. I was scared. They arrested him. He sat in jail 6 months till the real robber was caught. That was on me. Linda's shoulders slumped. Why'd you speak up? Because they cornered me. I thought I had to sound sure. By the time I realized I was wrong, it felt too late to fix. But ignorance doesn't vanish just because you call it truth. She processed that. We almost locked another man up today, Daniel. One or two more votes and that was it. He nodded. Maybe the next jury convicts. Maybe there's new evidence. But at least we didn't pretend we were certain when we weren't. That counts for something. They continued down the hall. Linda's footsteps echoed on the worn tile. I spent 3 decades auditing for a living. Always wanted numbers to be black and white. Now I see how quickly data can mislead you if you ignore the context. Maybe I should have realized that sooner. Daniel paused at a window overlooking the courthouse. Steps. Outside, the rain had stopped, revealing a sky still heavy with leftover clouds. We only see what we're ready to see. Some never look past the surface. She followed his gaze. You'll still think about Mark Hastings, won't you? He sighed. Yeah. Whether or not he's guilty, I won't forget how close we came to deciding for him. That's justice, I guess. Hope we did right by questioning it. She swallowed. Hard to know if we did enough. Hard to ever know, he agreed. They descended to the lower level. Through the open doorway, Daniel spotted Mark Hastings speaking in hushed tones with his attorney. He looked up at the jurors, expression caught between relief and weariness. For an instant, Daniel was afraid Hastings might storm over, angry at not being exonerated. Instead, the man gave a small, almost unsure nod, acknowledgement maybe that not everyone had turned against him. Daniel returned it in kind, equally unsure. Frank stalked by, shoulders stiff. He passed Hastings and wordlessly moved on, ignoring the chance to make eye contact. Janice rushed out the doors, rummaging in her purse, perhaps longing to leave the courthouse behind as fast as possible. Others had already vanished. Green notebook had melted into the crowd. Standing by the main entrance, Linda pursed her lips. They'll pick a new jury. Run it again. Might end the same way or differently altogether. That's how the system works, Daniel said. Cycles until someone's sure or claims to be. They stepped outside. The courtyard glistened with fresh rain. A battered sedan with yesterday's newspaper on its dash waited by the curb, presumably Linda's. Daniel turned to her. Good luck getting home. She gave a small shrug. Good luck sleeping tonight. He watched her go, then walked across the sidewalk. He was alone with the last pangs of leftover adrenaline and a damp wind pulling the clouds apart. The city bus arrived, sighing at the intersection before rumbling forward. No one gave him a passing glance. As he reached the crosswalk, he felt a faint tension easing from his shoulders, though the residue of doubt stayed behind his ribs. A few blocks later, he retrieved his car from the public lot. The engine sputtered to life. He drove through narrow streets that shone under life. His lamplight, wanting to breathe the evening air but finding the windows fogged. He could almost feel the pharmacy's old ghost leaning over his seat, reminding him of that moment he'd let fear shape his judgment. Stopping at a red light, he let out a breath. He pictured Mark Hastings's eyes when the mistrial was called. Disbelief, hope, a flicker of something that might be relief. But it wasn't over for him. Not really. The question of guilt or innocence would hang in limbo until the system decided. Daniel suspected Hastings would carry that weight, either way. By the time he reached his apartment, the sky had settled into a quiet hush. He climbed the stairs, footsteps sounding heavier than usual. On his kitchen counter sat the same Seattle Mariners mug that had greeted him every morning for years. He considered filling it with instant coffee, but settled for water, gulping it down in one go. A single piece of paper from the courthouse sat by the sink, a reminder of the summons that had turned his routine inside out. He switched on a single lamp, then slumped into the threadbare armchair where he sometimes read the sports section. Tonight, the pages stayed folded. His mind was too full of what-ifs to absorb box scores or local happenings. After a long silence, he fished out a slip of paper from his wallet. It was the note with the wrong suspect's name, the one he'd carried for years. Faded handwriting that once spelled out a man's fate. He never showed it to anyone else, but he kept it as a bruise on his conscience, a reminder to ask questions first and accept easy answers last. He thumbed it, then tucked it away again. Sleep came eventually, fitful and thick, with dreams of a red cap turning corners, always too fast to see the face beneath. In the morning, he rose under a sky that threatened more rain. He made coffee, black and instant, ignoring the way his gut still clenched. Another day, another list of tasks, but the world wasn't quite the same. He passed the courthouse on his way to work, studying the building's facade baking under early light. Already it was open for business, another set of jurors filing in, each one certain they could weigh truth perfectly. Each day, more shoulders would bear the burden of passing judgment. Turning onto a busier avenue, Daniel took in the small routines he once found comforting. The diner's neon sign buzzing half-burnt, school crossing guards with sleepy expressions. It felt surreal to return to anything normal, but routine could be an anchor after a storm. At a red light, he let the engine idle and found himself touching the Mariner's mug on the seat beside him, as though it might bring a sense of stability. 15 minutes later, he arrived at the pharmacy. The open sign flickered in the window. Sandy, the new cashier, was already inside, stacking shelves. She glanced up, startled to see him so early. "Everything okay?" she asked. He nodded, slipping off his jacket. "Just felt like I should be here." She studied him with mild concern. "Trial done?" "Mistrial," he replied. "They'll do it again." "Might bring in different folks to decide." She pressed her lips together. "That's strange, to go through all that and not end it." "Strange is right," he said softly, and left it there. He felt the pharmacy's hum around him, the whir of the fan, the quiet beep of the cash register, the scuff of boxes on tile. Normal noise, reassuring in its own small way. He thought of Linda Reeves, how her voice had quivered when she cast that final vote. Or Mark Hastings, the faint shock in his eyes as the mistrial was declared. Different people in the same crucible, doing their best to see something clearly. The morning slipped by in a quick rhythm of routine tasks. At lunch, Daniel found himself unwrapping a sandwich without really tasting it. Outside, a garbage truck rumbled by, and he closed his eyes, letting its echo fade before forcing another bite. When the phone rang, he answered and refilled a prescription, fighting the undercurrent of memory that threatened to pull him back into the jury room. By closing time, the sky had darkened again, pregnant with another round of rain. As Daniel locked up, he caught his reflection in the door's glass. His eyes looked older, lined with a weariness that had nothing to do with physical exhaustion. But there was also a certain resolve. He was still standing. Maybe that was enough. On the drive home, the wind whipped leaves against the windshield. He thought about Linda, whether she'd gone back to comfortable numbers or if she'd speak, haunted by the doubt they'd shared. He wondered if Mark Hastings had a place to sleep that night, or if every knock at the door might feel like a final verdict arriving. He parked near his apartment building and trudged up the worn steps. Outside his neighbor's door, cigarette smoke curled under the frame, carrying some aimless country tune from a half-tuned radio. He cracked his own door open, turning on the light in the narrow hallway. The envelope from the courthouse still lay on his table, a silent marker of obligation. He pulled it closer, running his thumb over the lettering. "Jury service required," it had said. He flipped it over again. Mistrial. No one had typed that, but it was the real ending. He set it down, remembering how the judge's voice carried an undercurrent of finality and disappointment. Then he reminded himself that they'd done what they could. The system would roll on, with or without him. A soft noise from down the hall made him pause. It was just Mr. Corbett from 2D, rattling a bag of groceries, but Daniel found his heart racing anyway, expecting more tension at every corner. The day had carved new grooves in his mind. He exhaled slowly, rubbed the bridge of his nose, and turned off the overhead light. In the living room, he settled onto the couch. Outside the window, the streetlights lit up damp expanses of asphalt. Everything was as it had been, yet something beneath the surface had shifted. The old comfort in small tasks felt fragile, but maybe it was all the more precious because it could vanish in a single unlucky moment. He closed his eyes and let the day's images wash over him. The defendant's white knuckles, Linda's wavering pencil, Frank pounding the table. He pictured the shape of the next jury, new faces looping through the same evidence, hearing the same arguments. Would they reject the doubt or embrace it? Would Mark Hastings walk away free or stay trapped in the gears of a system that sometimes confused correction with closure? Slouching deeper into the cushion, he breathed the musty apartment air. Time claimed everything eventually. Good or bad. His phone buzzed. A telemarketer, probably. He silenced it, letting the device slip to the floor. For a moment, he thought about driving back to the courthouse just to stand. There to watch the steps under the glow of the lamps, remembering that not every trial came sealed with an ending. He didn't move. Sometimes half measures were all a man had left in him. A smile ghosted his lips. Thin and wan, but it was there. He'd confronted the same illusions that had haunted him for years. And though he still carried regrets, he'd refused to let them rule him. Night settled in. Rain tapped the window in a stray drizzle. He listened to its hush, calm and relentless. The clock on his shelf ticked onward, second by second, bridging the gap between the day that was and the day to come. Tomorrow, he'd wake up to the shriek of the old kettle, fill his chipped mariner's mug, and face a world that rarely apologized for its mistakes. But he'd walk forward anyway, uncertain yet resolved. Somewhere, perhaps, Linda Reeves was driving home in that battered sedan, the same quiet sense of relief and doubt swirling in her mind. Somewhere else, Mark Hastings might be stepping into a cold apartment or a friend's couch, uncertain if next time he'd be so lucky. And Daniel would still show up at the pharmacy, answering phone calls and filing forms, ready to do it all again if circumstances demanded. For now, he let the evening cradle him. Outside, a lone car passed, headlights sweeping across the window like a silent witness. His heart felt heavy, but he knew that burden was the price of caring. In a world so keen on swift verdicts, sometimes refusing to settle gave a man back his own soul. He drifted into a half-doze. Rain drummed a soft, persistent lullaby against the roof. And in that gentle dark, he thought he could almost hear the faint ring of the old pharmacy bell, a memory that no longer cut quite so deep. If that was progress, he'd take it. Thank you for choosing Astory Publishing.